Out in the Sonoran Desert, home of the saguaro cactus and Gila monster, 20 people are getting into the back of a pickup truck. Mostly teenage boys, two women, the rest men. They're Mexicans, and we're in Mexico, 2 miles south of the border at Sasebe, Arizona. It's 10:30 in the morning, close to 100 degrees. In a few minutes, the truck will take them to the barbed wire fence on the border, and they'll begin walking north. My partner, photographer Julian Cardona, asked them what part of Mexico they come from.
¿Nos pueden decirnos los lugares de México donde vienen uno por uno?
Veracruz.
Oaxaca.
Veracruz.
Oaxaca.
DF. Oaxaca.
Oaxaca.
¿Dónde?
Tabasco.
Buenas tardes. ¿De qué parte es?
Buenas tardes.
There's a Mexican border agent with us, Beta Group Officer Carlos Ozaya Moreno. He's got a uniform, he's got a badge, but his job is not to apprehend these people, it's to assist them in their journey. He says, are you guys prepared? You have water, food? You realize you're going to have to walk for a long time, maybe for hours, maybe for days. You're going to have to walk at night. He tells the group if they get into trouble to contact his office. Beta Group can help. The men and boys nod, but in a few minutes they're going to be in the United States, and in a few hours it'll be 115 degrees in the shade. And what can Beta Group do for them then?
So, can we see what you have, what you're going to carry with you?
Water.
Sardine, water.
Suero.
Suero is water mixed with electrolytes.
Limones, sal,
ajo,
garlic.
Garlic.
Maybe you would.
We don't know. One more question. Are you worried they might die?
No.
Life is that way.
Gracias.
Officer Zozaya gives us a ride back into Sasebe. And I tell him I'm confused about his job.
You don't try to stop them from going across?
No.
He says no. According to Mexican law, every citizen has the right to leave the country. So Beta Group helps them if they get sick, and they count the numbers of people leaving. He says in the winter, about 3,000 people come through the Sasebe area every day. Now, in June, because of the heat, it's down to 1,000 a day. He calls the migrants pollos, or chickens. What's not legal, he says, is to be a coyote, someone who smuggles chickens across the border for money.
So, was there a guide, a coyote, with them?
I ask him if there was a coyote with a group in the back of the pickup truck.
Seguramente.
And he says, for sure. They had a coyote, and they were each paying between $1,000 and $2,000 for his service. I do the math. If there's between 1 and 3,000 people moving through the Sasebe area every day, that's about 500,000 people a year. And if each pays $1,000 for a coyote, that's $500 million, a travel industry unto itself. Only sometimes the pollos don't make it. They get caught by U.S. Border Patrol, they get robbed by bandits, or they get separated from the group and the coyotes leave them behind. They get lost, they die. Sometimes their bodies are never found. You can see some of the money in Sasebe, Sonora, just across from Sasebe, Arizona. You don't see it in the homes and businesses, as these are adobe hovels. The town is the kind of place you wouldn't really want to get out of your car. Dirt roads, the natives a tad hostile, but there is an unusual presence of new pickup trucks, with a preference for the Ford F-150 Lobo. $30,000, and sometimes they're driven by young boys, barely tall enough to reach the gas pedal and see over the dashboard.
So that guy?
He looks like about 13.
12 or 13.
Julian has photos of a 9-year-old driving his new Lobo to school.
That's the truck you were talking about.
No, another one.
This is
one.
A different one?
Different one. And they are the owners. Believe me.
We spend the afternoon walking around, looking at the motels and crash pads where the migrants hole up during the heat of the day. We try to talk to some people inside an adobe bunkhouse, but a young man stops us out front and asks us to leave because he's worried about being seen talking to us. People get killed around here for less, he says. About 5:30 in the afternoon, the people start coming out on the street. Men, women, and children in groups, each with a small backpack, carrying a 1 gallon jug of water or suero. Julian and I follow a group of 27 that includes kids about 4 or 5 years old and 2 babies. They walk north toward the border, and when they're about 200 yards from the U.S. Customs House, they turn right off the road and head up a rocky hillside. One man says his name is Jesus from Mexico City. He's trying to get to Houston. He says he's made this trip before, and one time he was robbed. He says, you just have to look out for yourself out here. There's no other alternative. He says, this is not our fault. The fault lies with our government. They help only the rich. They steal a lot. Us poor people, they treat us very badly. We're hungry. We have to struggle for what we get in life. The group stops on the far side of the hill, out of sight of the U.S. Customs office. Julian is taking photos of the people, and one man, probably the coyote, is waving his arms, telling them to stop. Nobody makes a sound except the babies. The view looking north is of a desert floor stretching 10 miles to a range of mountains. It could be the Serengeti, but it's southern Arizona, a part known as the Buenos Aires National Wildlife Refuge. Nobody out there but bandits and U.S. Border Patrol. These people are going to walk across this desert in the dark. It's 60 miles to Tucson. Maybe their coyote has a pickup truck waiting somewhere and they won't have to walk the whole distance. Or maybe they'll be arrested and sent back. Or maybe they'll get separated and lost. I can't help thinking, what about the babies, the little kids? It seems like a big mistake, but they're going to do it. They get up and start walking north toward the wildlife refuge. I watch them go, wondering what it is they come from to make this worth the risk. The Buenos Aires National Wildlife Refuge is a big chunk of land, 118,000 acres. Used to be a cattle ranch, but is now managed by the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service as a home to 325 species of birds, 53 reptiles and amphibians, 58 mammals, and the endangered Pima pineapple cactus. At the visitor center, I pick up a tip sheet called Safety Precautions. It says, what makes the Buenos Aires National Wildlife Refuge so attractive are the grasslands, open spaces, wildlife, and water. These same attributes make the refuge an ideal point for illegal entry into the United States. You should avoid contact with these groups or individuals. If you're approached for food or water, you should leave the area and contact refuge personnel or Border Patrol, who will assist them. Do not put yourself at risk by giving aid. In Yellowstone, it's dangerous to feed the bears. Here, it's dangerous to feed the illegal aliens.
Hi, this is Fish and Wildlife 482.
Sylvester Martinsik is a security officer for the refuge.
1010 code 103.
He's a young man, 6'4", and has big hands that are shaking due to the fact he's been working most of the past 48 hours.
Excellent, and I'll be 101 radio right now.
He lives on the refuge, says there are aliens going by his house day and night.
Thanks.
I ask him to tell me about it, and he starts reading from his log 2 days before.
Well, I started out my day with exercise, and then I apprehended 2 groups of aliens at my house. And then one of the groups, the second group, I always ask them if there's more people in the group, you know, what their condition is, etc. And they told me that there were several more. Actually, they crossed the border with 27, I think, or 28 people. 28 people. And then they'd already left 7 behind. And they'd already been walking about 4 days. And they claimed to have been out of food and water for 3 days. And they left a woman and kids behind. They didn't know where they left them. They just left them. Often what they do is they'll all go take a nap. and then they'll wake up the ones that are strong, and then they'll just leave the other ones that are weak.
There's no way to be sure, but the group he's describing sounds like the group Julian and I saw leaving Sasebe. The timing is right, the number of people is right, and there were two babies.
We went out and looked for them, and these people, they're completely nude in the dirt, covered with dirt rolling around, dirt in their mouth. They look like Aborigines. I mean, they look sad. They were sitting there groveling in the dirt like my dog would when he can't find shade, you know. And that's what they're doing, you know. And it was a really sad sight to see. There was in one spot, you know, in their eyelids, they had dirt. They opened their mouth, they had dirt in their mouth. And that's normally what they do, you know, right before they die. So they're pretty bad off. And the one guy was dry heaving over there. They told me that they couldn't walk anymore. They couldn't walk back to my house from where they'd seen my house, and it was a couple miles. And so...
At a certain point in the conversation, Sylvester starts feeling uncomfortable and asks me to turn off the tape recorder. He says he hasn't had enough sleep, and he's worried he's not making any sense and may say something he shouldn't for his job, for reasons he's not even sure about. He just doesn't want to talk anymore. I say, okay, fine. But what happened to the people he found in the desert? And he says he called the Border Patrol, and they came and got them. Then he says, maybe I should talk to his wife, Lisa. She's at home, making dinner. Maybe I should come to dinner. The Martinsics, Sylvester, Lisa, their five kids and two dogs, live in a ranch house, 20 miles from the nearest neighbor, 25 miles north of the border. They're devout Christians, the bookshelves full of religious books. They're homeschooling their kids. The oldest is 8, the youngest is almost 1. Sly's away a lot, working both day and night, so Lisa's there alone with the kids. And the ranch house, to someone who's walked 25 miles from the border, is a place with water and food and a phone. When they come to the house, it's because they can't go any farther. They come to give up.
Just the other day we had 3 of them on Sunday morning stop by, and then the other night we had 35 or 40 come in front of our house. So there's quite a bit.
What time at night?
That was 11 o'clock, but sometimes you'll hear, we'll have our windows open, we can hear cars driving by through here all hours of the night. So when our dogs start barking in a certain way, we can tell. And we look out the windows, and usually there's aliens, and the kids have to, I try to have them not show themselves, not make any noise.
Do they come right up to your house?
Shortly after we moved here, there was an older man who hopped the fence and came up to, I think they came up the back, and then he came around and came through, there's a door over there, and he sat on our porch, and then he kept using his walking stick to pound on our door, and that was really unnerving. And for one thing, many of them are criminals, and they have records. So that's a bad thing in and of itself. So if we've got terrorists coming across, there's no way to stop them, really. If they want to be across, they can come across. It's not a problem. And I don't know how far all that extends, but... Paul, please stop. Okay?
Are you worried about your kids being out here?
At times, I am. I believe in God. I believe He's there with me, and whatever He will allow to happen to me is in His design and in His plan, and I can rest in that. I can sleep at night. You know, I'm not really brave in and of myself, but I can be confident in Him. So that's how I see it.
I leave Sly and Lisa's house at sunset, drive along a dirt road, back to the highway that goes north to Tucson. The desert at this hour does not look or feel hostile. The sun is safely beyond the horizon, and the grass and trees seem to be glowing from exuberance at having made it through another day. In the hour or so before dark, this is not a place where women and kids are wandering lost, not a place where naked men swim through the dirt. This is when men and boys from Oaxaca and Veracruz sit in the grass and eat lemons and garlic, when babies stop crying and fall asleep in their mother's arms. For an hour or so, Sly and Lisa can relax, put their own kids to bed, and watch the sky change from orange to red to blue to black. Could you say where we are? Where are we right now?
We're probably within 200 or 300 yards of the fence. And it's invisible. It's just like when you look overhead. There aren't any Mexican stars or American stars. It's like a great biological unity with a meat cleaver of law shredding and cutting it in half.
You think they're just...
We're in an odd circumstance. We're in a national wildlife refuge, a sanctuary. There's 1,000 Mexicans out here scared to death trying to make it into the United States. And there's dozens, perhaps hundreds of Border Patrol personnel with the hairs on the back of their neck standing up all night. If you look to the north, northeast, you can see the glow of the lights of Tucson. If you look down at your feet, they're going to have to move constantly for 3 days to get there. And they're afraid. They're afraid of the desert at night anyway. It's a different desert when you're being hunted. They've spent their life as human beings. They cross the wire. They become a deer surrounded by lions. They don't, you know, they can't move during the day much. After about 11 a.m., the heat will knock them down. I'm convinced in the Tucson sector this summer, 300 people will die. Maybe 100 will get counted. Maybe they'll find 100 bodies. You could go over here tonight, 75 feet from this road, and lie under a tree and die. They won't find your bones till the end of the world. There's not going to be a clue. You'll be cleaned out by rotten wildlife in a couple weeks, most. You become invisible. You never existed. Somebody in Mexico will wonder why they never heard from you again. You can't watch this and see it happening and think anything is going right in Mexico economically. Nobody'd go through this hell if they had a choice. It's a war zone. Only nobody will admit it's a war, and nobody has the decency or honesty to even count the casualties. These people that are risking their lives tonight to cross this desert, when they get to their Chicago or their Los Angeles or their North Carolina, will send more money back to Mexico next year than Mexico will make by selling oil. You take a man, you put him 300 yards south of here, and he can't find a job, he can barely feed himself. You move him across this desert, you get him to an American city, Mexico no longer has to feed him, and he becomes a major source of wealth because he sends money home to try to take care of his people who were left behind. So a 135-pound man, that's a liability to the Mexican government. If they can just move him across the fence, becomes a money pump, like a private ATM that sustains their society. It's the coming thing. Mexico's finally found a product that makes it money, expelling its own citizens into a foreign country.
Well, what's the solution to this problem?
What's the problem?
The problem is all these people coming across the border into the United States.
The solution is to make them unemployable in the United States. Fine every employer $1,000 an hour for employing a person without a work permit or citizenship. see how long it takes to stop illegal immigration. But if you do that, you don't solve the problem of Mexico. A nation we have deep economic agreements with, a nation we share a common border of 1,833 miles, and a nation which will both will collapse and explode if you shut this down. It's not simply we don't have a solution. We don't even have the guts to ask the question. We pretend we're addressing illegal immigration. We don't stop them at the border. We don't give them any decent rights if they get in. We're creating a second class of citizens that can work, but can't vote, can't complain because they'll be deported, can't organize because they're not legal members of our society. We've reinvented slavery. Really? We don't even have the decency the slave owners once had to at least say what they were doing.
You think it's slavery? You think that's... Is that an exaggeration?
Where do they go to complain about the way they're treated? What office do they go to? They don't have papers. They're here illegally. They're employed. All the employers pretend they don't know. All the employers are liars. They're tolerated by employers because they can cheat them, pay them miserable wages, and abuse them. If they complain, ship them home. So what you have is a lose-lose proposition. There will be no solution for illegal immigration into the United States until you fix the places it comes from. If Mexicans get anything remotely like a decent job in Mexico, they're not going to be crawling through wires and walking across hot deserts to get to Los Angeles or Chicago or North Carolina. But the United States has no Marshall Plan for Mexico, has no projects to pump money in and develop it. The United States sends at least $30 billion a year into Mexico as payment for drugs. It doesn't send anything like that to build an industrial base or an economic base in Mexico. So our noses care more about Mexico than our corporations, period. You're seeing the solution. The solution is pretend to deal with the question, don't deal with the question, and the people come north.